year that made me.
The year that made me.
Well, at the age of only 35, my guest today has already lived through a lot. Born in Afghanistan, he was only one when the Soviets invaded and he fled to Pakistan with his parents. He was a young adult when his family returned in 2001 after the fall of the Taliban, but he had to leave again in 2008 after the Taliban threatened his life. He returned a year later, but had to flee again when his life was threatened in 2011. And this time, he came to Australia. Why was he threatened by the Taliban? Well, he established credit unions that provided microfinance to Afghanis who were keen to become self-employed and financially independent. And why did this upset the Taliban so much? Well, we're about to find out. Mahir Momand, welcome to Sunday Extra.
Thanks very much.
What do you remember about growing up in Pakistan as a refugee?
So my first memories would be of the time when I was about 5 or 6 years old, and that was the time when I started school at the grade one. And those were unfortunately not very good and positive memories, because even starting at grade one, the school, the refugee school that I was going to, which was supported by Pakistan at the time, were teaching us literacy and numeracy with the help of guns and bullets. For example, here in Australia, you teach your kids with things like A for apple, B for banana. For me, it was S for sword. We go to kill supposedly infidels with sword, or G for gun. My uncle has gun, and we go to jihad with guns. So those were the type of things that we were taught at grade one, which was my very first memories of my life as a refugee child in Pakistan.
And then after the Taliban was toppled by the US-led intervention, some might say invasion, you went back to Afghanistan, right?
We were one of the very first families who went back to Afghanistan. And right upon my arrival, because I had been educated in the refugee schools and then later went to a refugee university, I was able to start working with the United Nations High Commission for Refugees, or UNHCR, short of that. And we were bringing in Afghan refugees from Pakistan and Iran back to Afghanistan. So between 2001 and 2004, we brought back 2.4 million people. While a lot of them stayed in their country of origin, a large number of them were returning back to the countries where they were refugees. And the reason for that was that if they were farmers, they had returned back to their country after 30 years or 20 years, and those farms did not exist anymore because they were destroyed by the Soviets or by the Taliban or Mujahideen at the time. If they had businesses, those businesses obviously did not exist. So there were no economic opportunities for them to keep them connected to their country of origin. And that's what was the reason for them to go back to where they were living.
There would have been widespread jubilation when the Americans toppled the Taliban in Afghanistan in late 2001, right?
That's right.
And then you arrived back in Afghanistan, you got work with the UN agencies, and then in 2004 you started work with the World Bank. That's the year that made you, right? 2004?
Tell us more. That's right. So I called 2004 as the year that made me. And the reason for that is that was a time in my life when I looked at the economic situation in Afghanistan. A lot of people did not have jobs. And as I mentioned earlier, they were leaving back to being refugees once again. And the reason for that was that there were no economic opportunities. This was also the time when World Bank had opened its doors back in Afghanistan after an absence of about 40 years or so. Because during the Soviet time and also the Taliban and Mujahideen time, they didn't have an office in there. So they had just opened their office and they were looking for ways to actually develop the Afghanistan's economy. Me and a few other friends gave them this idea as to how you can use microfinance to grow grassroots level economies in Afghanistan, and how you can use small loans to develop jobs for people. And that's what the time when they funded that with initially with $30 million, and we embarked on that journey, and we started giving out loans to three types of people. People who did not have jobs, who were unfortunately in rural areas recruited by the Taliban for insurgency purposes. So we would give them loans to start their own businesses. The second category was people who were growing opium. Unfortunately, even today, Afghanistan remains the biggest producer of opium in the world. So we would give them loans to start growing licit crops, as we refer to them, things like saffron, which were much more expensive than opium. And the third category was women, who are 50% of Afghanistan population. That was the very first time that we were including them in the fabric of the Afghanistan economy by giving them opportunity to start small businesses inside their households without the need for them to leave their doorsteps.
Yeah, but yet you were forced to leave Afghanistan again, this time because of a resurgent Taliban, right?
That's right. So effectively what we
What do they have against you?
By giving out loans to people who didn't have jobs, we were cutting from their capacity to recruit further in more insurgents. By giving loans to the farmers, we were cutting their revenues because majority of the opium revenues went to them. And by working with women, we were attacking their idols. Those were the three reasons that I was put on the top hit list of the Taliban. And through that period of time, I lost a lot of my colleagues until 2008, when the situation was such that I couldn't stay anymore in the country. And that led to me becoming a refugee for the second time in my life and leaving to Canada.
And you went to Canada, but you came back to Afghanistan the following year. Why was that?
That's right. So when I was in Canada, I was thinking to myself that the way Taliban announced the reason why they were attacking us was because we were involved in un-Islamic financing, where we charge interest. So I told myself while I was in Canada that I would return back to Afghanistan and do it in a way that was Islamically compliant. And when I told my Canadian immigration case officers, they thought that I had to quickly go and see psychiatrists, because they couldn't comprehend how someone can leave a beautiful country like Canada and go back to a country like Afghanistan. Before they knew it, I was on a plane going back to Afghanistan and started a new program in Afghanistan that did microfinance, but this time it was slightly different in the sense that it was culturally and religiously compliant. And the success of this program was by far bigger than what we had started a few years ago.
Let's go back here. So you go from Afghanistan to Pakistan, back to Afghanistan to Canada, and then to Afghanistan, and then to Australia in 2011.
Yes. During that period of time when I started that new program, the success of that was very large. We established 165,000 small and medium enterprises that employed directly and indirectly 1 million people. Afghanistan is a country of 30 million population. To have employed 1 million people just under 4 years' time was a big, big success. And I was protected by a lot of security, but not a lot of my colleagues. I had 1,200 employees and had established 41 community banks or credit unions and 15% of Afghanistan geography during that 4 or 5 years period of time. So that was seen as a big success. And a lot of my colleagues again got targeted, and I actually lost 17 of my colleagues to the Taliban during that
period. So 17 of your credit union colleagues were killed.
That's right.
Did you dodge any bullets?
I was attacked a few times until in September 2012, when I was attacked and I was shot in the shoulder, and that led to my immediate evacuation and arrival in Australia as a refugee.
And you've been here ever since?
Ever since.
And you want to stay here?
I would love to.
Tell us about your latest enterprise. You're the CEO of Thrive Refugee Enterprise. How was that established?
Thrive Refugee Enterprise was established with a lot of support from corporate organizations such as Westpac, Deloitte, KPMG, and a few others. And the idea behind Thrive is to assist people of refugee and asylum-seeking background to start their own businesses in Australia. Mm-hmm. We initially assessed them to understand what it takes to start a business in Australia. Because where they come from, if they wanted to set up a business, they would just go open shop. But here, they have to worry about ABN and ACN and lots of licensing requirements.
And what kind of businesses are you supporting?
Initially, I thought we'd be assisting a lot of kebab shops. The reality is that we don't have any kebab shop. I'm also amazed by the variety of businesses, and majority of them are service-based businesses.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of service-based businesses in the construction sector. Like, we have refugee consultants who provide consultancy to buildings on how to make way for disabled people to get to the buildings. We have painters, we have bricklayers, brick washers, and all that. We have hairdressers, we have beauticians, we have signage businesses. So it's a quite diverse range of businesses that we are supporting. And once we assist them to start their business. Then we provide them microfinance loans. And then for 2 to 3 years' time, we provide them what we call post-loan mentoring services, whereby we assist them to make sure that their businesses actually survive. If you look at statistics, mm-hmm. in Australia, 80 to 85% businesses fail in the first 2 years, small businesses. Uh-huh. So therefore, we want to make sure yes. that we are with them on that journey of critical time of their operation to make sure that these businesses succeed.
Well, that's all very intriguing. Mahir, you've chosen some Sufi music here as the music that has inspired you over the years. Can you briefly explain what Sufi music is for our listeners?
Sufi is a particular type of Islam, and the school of Sufis believe in love and peace. And because, unfortunately, in my life, there have been a lot of situations where I was forced to leave the country because of war and because of being attacked and all that. Mm. I have always had a desire to connect to something which was more peaceful, more quiet and calm and relaxing. Mm. And also deep and meaningful. That's the connection between me and Sufi music.
Well, that's fascinating. Well, here it is. Here's some Sufi music. Mahir, lovely to see you today. Thanks so much for being on Sunday Extra.
Thank you for having me.
A little taste of Turkish Sufi music for you, chosen by Mahir Momand. He was today's guest in The Year That Made Me.